We're going to look at this third fool, and in your New International Version and most of your versions, the simple, sometimes called a fool, the stupid is called a fool, and now we get to the helpless, and the state of being helpless, or helplessness, which is folly. And the simple, who is open to all possibilities, ends up in folly. The stupid, who knows it all, he's going to end up in folly. And the helpless is also going to end up in folly. Now, a lot of people were talking to me last week about this stupid person, and they were telling me, well, you can see a lot of the people who were down in New Orleans, who were living below sea level, and thinking that the flood was never going to come. Well, is that helpless folly or is it stupid folly? Well, it's stupidity that leads to folly. When somebody tells you the water's coming, and you kind of say, okay, then you're going to be helpless. And if we define helpless as those people who were hanging out on their roofs waiting for somebody to pick them up, that is the definition of folly. Helplessness. Okay? Any questions about this? This is, again, politically very, very incorrect, but it just happens to be what God says will happen. And he will hopefully get tonight to where we're dealing with some of the prophetic stuff and what they say about this helplessness. So first of all, we want to deal with this helpless person is weak, therefore defensive and angry. We're going to look at some scriptures tonight, and we're going to see that this helpless person, because they're so ill-trained or unable to see reality or see things for the way they are or to reason, that their only defense against power or reason is to just get angry or get loud and get mad. So we will see this here. Proverbs 29:9. If a wise man goes to court with a fool, now get this, we have the wise man. What's the wise man got if he goes to court, say, in the people's court? Well, he's got all of his receipts and vouchers and canceled checks and all of that kind of stuff. And the person on the other side is the fool, and what's he got? Nothing. So what does he try to do? He tries to shout down the judge, right? And interrupt. Because he has no other defense. Does it work? No, it does not work. So it says, the fool rages and scoffs, and there is no peace. Sometimes this is a good strategy. Bill Cosby has a routine, which I like, where he's talking about his two youngest girls, and when the littlest one was like two, and had just discovered the word mine. And her big sister had something that the little one wanted to play with. So at 5 o'clock in the morning, they got into a little fight, and the littlest girl had taken this toy and was abusing it as a 2-year-old would. So the big sister was trying to take it away from her, and the little one was going, "Mine! Mine! Mine! Mine!" And Bill Cosby says he got up and he got out of bed and he went downstairs, and the older girl said, "Well, it's a good thing Daddy's here. He'll protect my property rights. He'll give this to me." And Bill Cosby said, "Give it to your little sister." "Well, why?" "Because her voice is too harsh at 5 o'clock in the morning." So sometimes it is a good strategy if you can just huff and puff and blow and be irritating enough, you can just offer so little peace that you can win even though you don't have the right kind of stuff on your side. Now, the problem with this kind of winning by just disturbing the peace to such a degree that the other person just gives up is that eventually you will have to put up some wisdom. You will have to do something that can win. And because the other person is finally going to have enough and they're not going to let you win simply by your raging. This is kind of an interesting situation. I think this is the way we have the situation in Iraq, where it seems that no amount of reason for why we're there makes any sense to these terrorists. And they have decided that they are going to win simply by creating so much disturbance, so much pain, so much agony, so much ruckus, until there is just no peace, that eventually the our side is just going to throw up our hands and say, "Okay." But this is not a good policy according to the scriptures, because now you are letting this helpless person in their folly begin to rule. It's sort of like Adolf Hitler. Everybody thought he was a genius until Germany was a pile of rubble. Then everybody decided he wasn't such a genius after all, because he didn't think all the way through to the end, and he didn't think about what it would mean to have the United States come into the war. Second thing we see about a fool. A fool shows his annoyance at once, but a prudent man overlooks an insult. I was thinking about the illustration of Alexander Hamilton and Benjamin Franklin. Alexander Hamilton was the first secretary of the Treasury in our country's history. He was a brilliant, brilliant young man. And he was, basically he saved the United States financially when the Constitution was passed in our first few years of government under George Washington. But he was a proud man. And he had all of this brilliance, and he had all of this drive and desire and success in his life, but he simply could not abide an insult. His honor had to be defended at every turn. So people were a little touchy around him. And Aaron Burr, who was Vice President of the United States, or had been Vice President of the United States, didn't like him. And it was very easy to destroy Alexander Hamilton. He simply insulted him. And Alexander Hamilton challenged him to a duel, and Aaron Burr shot him dead. And here is this wonderful, intelligent, bright, attractive, energetic, successful, friendly. He had everything going for him, except he was a fool in that he could not control his frustration. And he died. Whereas we have Benjamin Franklin, who, on the other hand, lived to be very, very, very old. He lived to be very, very, very prosperous, and he lived to enjoy all of the things that he had earned in his life. Now, Benjamin Franklin, if you read his biographies, you find that he was regularly insulted, annoyed, frustrated, goaded by people who were in business, the same business as he was. You find out that when he went to the United States, when he went to Britain to represent the colonies, that they tried to goad him into responding, and they personally insulted him and threatened him. And Benjamin Franklin simply backed off, ignored it, kept his own counsel, came to the United States, or came back to the United States before there was a United States, and got his revenge by helping to form and make sure that the colonies succeeded in their rebellion against England. This is, I think, one of the biggest tragedies that I have seen. And some of you have surely seen it also. For people who have everything going for them, they throw it away in 10 minutes because they just cannot back off. They can't walk away when they know they're going to lose. So here we have the fool shows his annoyance at once, but a prudent man overlooks an insult. Proverbs 19:3, a man's own folly ruins his life, yet his heart rages against the Lord. I have seen this so many times. It doesn't even get my attention hardly at all. But somebody will frit away all their money. They will be completely disobedient to God. They will foolishly just get themselves in all kinds of trouble. And then when they get caught and their life is in ruins and they have nothing, when you ask them what went wrong, instead of saying, well, I made this mistake, or I made that mistake, or I should have learned more, or I should have been more patient, or I should have worked harder, they say, God's against me. That's why I failed. It's not my fault. If God were on my side, this would all work out. And they rage and they fume and they rail against God because things didn't work out when they actually had no chance of working out given the way they were operating. And it is, I've taken some classes in evangelism where they won't be truthful about this, dealing with this kind of a person. If you run into this person and you're trying to get them to accept the Lord, it's almost impossible. Because even though they have been ruined, even though they have lost everything, they still cannot come to grips with it might have been their own fault. And they blame God, and they're lost. Proverbs 27:3. Stone is heavy and sand a burden, but provocation by a fool is heavier than both. I had a friend of mine, we were at seminary together, and he had taken a call to a church, a little bitty church, and they lived in the Sunday school rooms in the back of the church, and they cooked in the kitchen, and they had a couple of little kids, and the church gave them a couple hundred dollars a month for a salary. They had virtually nothing. But they were serving God, and they were doing their best. And a lady called them on the phone and said, is your church doing anything for the poor this Thanksgiving? And my friend said, well, I don't think so, but I think we can get something together. So he went, and the church wasn't going to have a meeting, and it was short time, and so he got paid his little bit, and he felt so sorry for this woman. She was helpless. She didn't have a job. She didn't have any food in her house. And so he took this money that he could have used to feed his own family. He went down to the grocery store and he bought a turkey and a lot of canned goods and stuff and took it over to her house and knocked on the door and heard from inside, "Come on in! Who is it?" "Pastor, brought some groceries for you." "Oh, put them on the kitchen table with the others. I'm sorry I can't come to the door right now, but we just got a new TV set and I'm watching my favorite program." The provocation of a fool. But according to this woman, it was not her fault he was in trouble. It was everyone else's fault. And she really milked the system. And it was a heavy burden for my friend. He was less compassionate and a little wiser after that.